And this is Wednesday, November the 8th, God's salvation through history. We started last week as far as looking at some of the examples of God's salvation that we're trying to draw some things from them. And we were in Genesis, the 14th chapter, where we were looking at the battle of Abram, where Lot was taken. And Abram went after Lot with his servants, and he had 318 servants that he took with him, and he went to battle against the four kings. The four kings, if you remember, had fought with the five kings, and the four kings were victorious, and they prevailed, and they took Lot and his families and all the spoil and so forth, and Abram found out about it. And Abram took just 318 of his servants and went after the four kings, and he prevailed, and he won that battle. And in winning that, he was able to bring Lot back, Lot's families, and also the spoil along with that. And in verse 18, you have the thoughts of Melchizedek and Abram on his way back. And it's interesting where, if you remember, we set this whole thing up that God's salvation through history was, the main purpose was for God to receive the glory, for God to have the glory and the deliverance of those that that he delivered, and also against those that he had judgment against in the deliverance. The heathen nations were to give God glory, and also his own people were to give him the glory. So in verse 18 of Genesis chapter 14, Melchizedek, king of Salem, brought forth bread and wine, and he was a priest of the Most High God. And he blessed him, blessed Abraham, and said, "Blessed be Abram of the Most High God, possessor of heaven and earth." We see the attitude of Melchizedek here concerning Jehovah, that he was the Most High God, possessor of heaven and of earth. "And blessed be the Most High God, which hath delivered thine enemies into your hand." And he gave him tithes of all. So again, Melchizedek recognizes in telling Abram that the Lord is the one that delivered your enemies into your hand. "And the king of Salem said to Abram, give me the persons and take the goods for thyself." In verse 22, we have Abram's response. He said to the king of Sodom, "I have lifted up my hand to the Lord, the Most High God, the possessor of heaven and earth." When he says he's lifted up his hand, he's more or less saying that he's made a vow. And the vow that he made was that "I will not take from a thread even to a shoe latchet, and that I will not take anything that is thine, lest thou shouldst say, I have made Abram rich, save only that which the young men have eaten and the portion of the men which went after me." So again, Abram was very humble in the defeat that he had produced against them. And with the spoils and so forth, he wasn't saying that it was attributed to anything that he had done. He is still giving God the glory for it. And one of the applications that we ended up with last week was that our deliverance, or anybody's deliverance on this, should be looked upon as from God, because God is in sole control. And whether we are delivered or whether we are not, that comes from God. And that will be through His actions and through His providence when that comes about. Also, one of the things, applications that we can learn, is that the personal gain on this was not the motive for or after deliverance. It wasn't the motive of Abram, the reason that he went off after them and took all of that. It was that in that, as you look at it, as God delivered Abram, he also blessed Abram in allowing him to have the spoil. And that is some of the things and the ways that God works with those that are following after him. Not only will he deliver them, but he will also bless them in whichever avenue or way that he wants to. But again, the personal gain wasn't the motive that Abram had when he went out after them, and it wasn't the motive when he brought it back on that. So it's some thoughts there that we can think about, that our deliverance, we shouldn't look at it for a personal gain. So in our prayers, we have to kind of remember that when we give a prayer for deliverance concerning a distress that we're in, or maybe enemies or with whatever, that it shouldn't be for personal gain. It should not be for personal gain. Let God be the judge of that. Let God do what He wishes to do and whatever and however He does it. And when He does, be sure and give God the glory and the honor for it. And that's what Abram did. He gave God the glory and honor for not only the deliverance, but also for the gain that he did get, that was given to him. Okay? So there's just some thoughts on that as far as that deliverance. Anytime you want to say something or whatever, just holler or just let it be known. Okay? The next one I want to look at is in Genesis, the 20th chapter. And it's Abimelech. And it's Genesis, the 20th chapter. And in verses 1 through 18, I know it's rather lengthy reading, but it's the chapter, but I want to read it so that we can get kind of a backdrop as far as what happened. And Abraham journeyed from thence toward the south country and dwelt between Kadesh and Shur, and sojourned in Gerar. And Abraham said of Sarah, his wife, "She is my sister." And Abimelech, king of Gerar, sent and took Sarah. But God came to Abimelech in a dream by night and said to him, "Behold, thou art but a dead man, for the woman which thou hast taken, for she is a man's wife." But Abimelech had not come near her, and he said, "Lord, wilt thou slay also a righteous nation? Said he not unto me, she is my sister? And she, even she herself, said, he is my brother. In the integrity of my heart and innocency of my hands have I done this." And God said unto him in a dream, "Yes, I know that thou didst this in the integrity of thy heart, for I also withheld thee from sinning against me. Therefore suffered I thee not to touch her. Now therefore restore the man his wife, for he is a prophet, and he shall pray for you, and you shall live. And if you restore her not, know that thou shalt surely die, thou and all that are thine." Therefore Abimelech rose early in the morning and called all his servants and told all these things in their ears, and the men were sore afraid. Then Abimelech called Abraham and said to him, "What hast thou done unto us, and what have I offended thee, that thou hast brought on me and on my kingdom a great sin? Thou hast done deeds unto me that ought not to be done." Abimelech said unto Abraham, "What sawest thou, that thou hast done this thing?" And Abraham said, "Because I thought, surely the fear of God is not in this place, and they will slay me for my wife's sake. And yet indeed is she my sister, she is the daughter of my father, but not the daughter of my mother, and she became my wife. And when it came to pass, when God caused me to wander from my father's house, that I said unto her, 'This is thy kindness which thou shalt show unto me, at every place whither we shall come, say of me, he is my brother.' And Abimelech took sheep and oxen and men servant and women servants, and gave them to Abraham, and restored him Sarah his wife. And Abimelech said, 'Behold, my land is before thee, dwell where it pleaseth thee.' And unto Sarah he said, 'Behold, I have given thy brother 1,000 pieces of silver. Behold, he is to thee a covering of thy eyes, and to all that are with thee, and with all other.' Thus she was reproved. So Abraham prayed unto God, and God healed Abimelech and his wife and his maidservants, and they bare children. For the Lord had fast closed up all the wombs of the house of Abimelech because of Sarah, Abraham's wife." In this, one of the first things we notice as far as on this deliverance is that we need to notice the distress of Abraham. He was under distress. He was uncertain and anxious because God made him wander from the safety of his father's house. He mentions that. He said, "It came to pass when God caused me to wander from my father's house." He was took. God had taken him and told him to remove himself from the safety of around his own family. So therefore, he was uncertain and anxious about the areas that he was going to. He feared that people would take his life just to gain Sarah, so deception was conceived by him. He went about to solve this his way. There's going to be some deception. It was true. She was a sister to an extent, but she was also his wife. But yet, he deceived in order to try to protect her and to protect him. So there was fear there that the people would take his life. He was distressed also that the fear of God was not viewed to be in other people. And that's why he looked upon these other nations or these other lands that he sojourned through, that God sent him to, that he feared for his life because he didn't think the fear of God was there. And he states as such. So, what did happen? Abimelech did take Sarah, but we see the providence of God in working, that through God's means or whatever, that Abimelech did not sin against God in the taking and of Sarah and doing with her things that he shouldn't. And Abimelech also maintained a pure heart. He said, I was innocent in this whole thing. You know that, God. So it does show some of the religious aspect of Abimelech and his servants when he talks to them concerning, you know, what God had come to him and told him. So they were a God-fearing people. And he came to Abimelech in a dream by night, and he told him what was going to happen to him in a warning. And Abraham, after God and him talk, God says, well, now Abraham's going to pray for you. And in his prayer for you, you will be restored. You can consider some of the feelings that Abraham had. Consider some of the feelings that Abimelech had. I mean, here's a guy that did something against me. Or, you know, Abimelech is saying, why did you cause all this to come about the way you did it and everything? And then now, he's going to be the one praying for me. But, you know, that's the way it works out. So, that's the situation here, that God did deliver Abraham and Sarah in this instance. And he did it through his providence. He directly intervened in it. And it had to come from God. It didn't come from any other means or any other way. So this distress that Abraham was going through was resolved by God and by him alone. And in that, you'll see that God did receive the glory for it. Because when Abraham had to pray, he had to pray to God, and God did bless Abimelech. And so therefore, God's going to receive the glory. Not only of that nation, but also of Abraham. Should have. So in this, when you look at it, some of the applications and what we can learn about is not to be anxious and worried when changes come about. Because that's what Abraham did. He became anxious and he worried because of the changes that were coming about. He had to leave his father's homeland. There was changes going on. He had to go to different countries. He didn't know what was going to happen, how they were going to react, what it was going to be like. And so, you know, therefore, he was anxious about that. When we're facing distressful situations, we need to keep in mind and consider knowing that God is in control. Even though Abraham didn't think that God was going to be with him, that the fear of God wasn't there, God was still in control. And God, through his providence, came before Abimelech and told him and warned him of what not to do. So God is still in control. One of the other things we can look at and learn from this is God works his providence in other people's lives for our benefit. Now, even though that person or those people may not be righteous, but God will still use them. And again, he works his providence in other people's lives for our benefit, for his children's benefit. So that's something that you always got to consider. Sometimes you wonder, well, why is this happening or why is that happening or why is this person doing that or why is that person doing that? It's God's way of working through them to bless us. Sometimes we wonder why all these people get the money and the wealth that they do when they're not religious people and that they're corrupt and they do the things they do. Well, sometimes you look in their businesses how many people they do support through that. And then you would have to stop and think, how many Christians do they support through that business?
It also shows that God's grace it's to all of his creation, not to just his chosen people. I mean, he graced Abimelech thereby making him withhold himself so he wouldn't be sinning against the Lord and, you know, receiving the punishment of death.
Right.
So,
God is not the one just sitting back waiting, as some people think, that he's sitting back waiting for. He's waiting for Abimelech to make that mistake so that he could strike him down. God was merciful in that he approached him, but he also knew the innocency of Abimelech's heart. And, you know, when you look at it, you can draw a lot from it, and, you know, that's up to your own individual studies, but Abimelech, you can kind of say he did the same thing Job did in a different sense. Abimelech approached God and said, hey, you know my heart. just the same as cases where David did. You know how I am. You know my heart. You know the way. And Abimelech went before God and told him and laid out his life before him. You know my heart. You know I was innocent and that he hadn't done anything wrong.
Mm-hmm.
And so there you have, you know, if your life is in that such a shape, you can have that confidence in going before God and saying such. And God didn't accuse Abimelech for being, you know, boastful or anything else. He said, I know it, and that's caused you not to sin, and so forth. So you are right in that, the mercy and the grace of God. We also find here that to pray on behalf of other people. Abraham had to pray on behalf of Abimelech, and God did allow him to be restored and his people under him so that they could start bearing children again, because God had worked against that. So you see sometimes the prayer on behalf of other people. So the whole situation turned around. Abraham is afraid. He was fearful. And here he is now praying for Abimelech. We're not told what it was specifically that he prayed for, but he had to pray for Abimelech. And so in that thing, in that instance, God elevated Abraham before Abimelech. And I'm sure that there you have the praise of Abraham to God, and then also the praise of Abimelech to God. So there's just some thoughts on that. But he was delivered out of that scenario, in that situation. Okay? Next one we want to look at is in Exodus, the 13th chapter. Because we're all familiar with it. The 13th chapter, verse 17, down through the 14th chapter, and verse 31, it's the crossing of the Red Sea. And in this, in looking at it, God has went through great extremes. When you really look at it and read about it, he went into great extremes with the people that you would think, why in the world did they have fear? But we'll see, and I don't know why. But in the 13th chapter, verse 17, it came to pass when Pharaoh had let the people go that God led them not through the way of the land of the Philistines, although that was near. For God said, lest peradventure the people repent when they see war and they return to Egypt. Here again, the mercy of God. People weren't ready. God knew their heart. They weren't ready to go that way. And he said, if they go that way, it's going to be such a temptation to them and such a trial that they're going to give up. And so there you see the mercy of God. But God led the people about through the way of the wilderness of the Red Sea, and the children of Israel went up, harnessed out of the land of Egypt. And Moses took the bones of Joseph with him, for he had straitly sworn the children of Israel, saying, God will surely visit you, and you shall carry up my bones away hence with you. And they took their journey from Succoth and encamped in Etham in the edge of the wilderness. And the Lord went before them by day in a pillar of a cloud to lead them the way, and by night in a pillar of fire to give them light to go day and night. He took not away the pillar of the cloud by day, nor the pillar of fire by night from before the people. And the Lord spake unto Moses, saying, speak unto the children of Israel, that they turn and encamp before Pahariath, between Migdol and the sea, over against Baal Zephon. Beyond it shall ye encamp by the sea. For Pharaoh will say of the children of Israel, they are entangled in the land, the wilderness has shut them in. And I will harden Pharaoh's heart, that he should follow after them, and I will be honored upon Pharaoh and upon all his hosts, that the Egyptians may know that I am the Lord. And they did so. And it was told the king of Egypt that the people fled, and the heart of Pharaoh and of his servants was turned against the people. And they said, why have we done this, that we have let Israel go from serving us? And he made ready his chariot, and took his people with him. And he took 600 chosen chariots, and all the chariots of Egypt, and the captains over every one of them. And the Lord hardened the heart of Pharaoh, king of Egypt, and he pursued after the children of Israel, and the children of Israel went out with a high hand. But the Egyptians pursued after them all the horses and chariots of Pharaoh, and his horsemen and his army, and overtook them, encamping by the sea, beside Pihahiroth, between Baal and Zephon. And when Pharaoh drew nigh, the children of Israel lifted up their eyes, and behold, the Egyptians marched after them. And they were sore afraid, and the children of Israel cried unto the Lord. And they said unto Moses, Because there are no graves in Egypt, thou hast taken us away to die in the wilderness. Wherefore hast thou dealt thus with us to carry us forth out of Egypt? Is not this the word that we did tell you in Egypt, saying, let us alone that we may serve the Egyptians? For it had been better for us to serve the Egyptians than we should die in the wilderness. And Moses said unto the people, fear ye not, stand still and see the salvation of the Lord, which he will show to you today. For the Egyptians whom ye have seen today, you shall see them again no more forever. The Lord will fight for you, and ye shall hold your peace. And the Lord said unto Moses, wherefore criest thou unto me, speaking to the children of Israel, that they go forward? But lift up thy rod, and stretch out thy hand over the sea. Remember a week or two ago we talked about instruments that the Lord used. Here again, lift up the rod. The rod is a symbol that Moses was lifting up to show, you know, for them to see something that, well, it's going to be workings of God or whatever, but it could end up being a trap, as we saw, we'll see with the ark and so forth, that they begin placing more confidence in those things. So this is just the start of where the rod becomes an important tangible item for them to see and place their confidence in. He said, stretch it out over the hand over the sea and divide it. Your children of Israel shall go on dry ground through the midst of the sea. And I, behold, I will harden the hearts of the Egyptians, and they shall follow after them. And I will get me honor upon Pharaoh and upon all his host, upon his chariots and upon his horsemen. And the Egyptians shall know that I am the Lord, when I have gotten me honor upon Pharaoh, upon his chariots, and upon his horsemen. And the angel of God, which went before the camp of Israel, removed and went behind them, and the pillar of cloud went from before their face and stood behind them. And it came between the camp of the Egyptians and the camp of Israel, and it was a cloud and darkness to them, but it gave light by night to these, so that one came not near the other all the night. And Moses stretched out his hand over the sea, and the Lord caused the sea to go back by a strong east wind all that night, and made the sea dry land, and the waters were divided. And the children of Israel went into the midst of the sea upon the dry ground, and the waters were a wall unto them on their right and on their left. The Egyptians pursued and went in after them to the midst of the sea, even all Pharaoh's horses, his chariots, and his horsemen. And it came to pass that in the morning watch, the Lord looked upon the host of the Egyptians through the pillar of fire and of the cloud, and troubled the host of the Egyptians, and took off their chariot wheels, that they drove them heavily, so that the Egyptians said, let us flee from the face of Israel, for the Lord fighteth for them against the Egyptians. And the Lord said to Moses, stretch out your hand over the sea, that the waters may come again upon the Egyptians, upon their chariots, and their horsemen. And Moses stretched forth his hand over the sea, and the sea returned to its strength when the morning appeared. And the Egyptians fled against it, and the Lord overthrew the Egyptians in the midst of the sea. And the waters returned and covered the chariots and the horsemen and all the host of Pharaoh that came into the sea after them. There remaineth not so much as one of them. But the children of Israel walked upon dry land in the midst of the sea, and the waters were a wall unto them on the right hand and on their left. Thus the Lord saved Israel that day out of the hand of the Egyptians, and Israel saw the Egyptians dead upon the seashore. And Israel saw that great work which the Lord did upon the Egyptians. And the people feared the Lord and believed the Lord and his servant Moses. In this reading we find, one, the people weren't ready to see war based upon God knowing their hearts, so he sent them another way. Protection from God was always there, with a pillar of a cloud by day and a pillar of fire by night to give them light. So they were never in the dark, more or less. I mean, God's presence was always there, ever there. God declared that he would be honored by Pharaoh and all his hosts so that the Egyptians would know the one true God. The Egyptians were religious from the standpoint that they had gods, but they had gods of nature and gods of the animals and gods of the heavens. And all your plagues that God had prevailed against them was against their deities that they worshipped. And the deities that they worshipped became a curse to them in all the ones that he used in the plagues against them. Pharaoh had a mass army, 600 chosen chariots, along with all the other chariots of Egypt, with captains over each one. So this wasn't just a small army. This was a great host. All his horses, all the chariots, all the horsemen, and his army pursued and they overtook Israel by the sea. And so here is the site that you're looking at, that you have this big host of Egypt and its mighty power on one side of you, and you're trapped on the other side by the sea. And so this sight caused fear to set in among the children of Israel when they saw this great host over here and the army of Pharaoh. And so they automatically start calling out to the Lord. They start placing blame everywhere. And they blame it on Moses. And they just lacked any confidence whatsoever on this. And the people faced with this dilemma wavered. They wavered. And they complained to Moses about what he had done for them. And so Moses responds for them to be not afraid, but to place confidence in the Lord who would deliver them. It's interesting how Moses handled and dealt with these things. In modern day and time with us, how would we handle with it? If you saw such a great army come against you and someone had talked you into doing something and the outcome and the circumstances look pretty bleak, the first thing that we do is, you know, do we look for an avenue of escape, or do we look toward placing the blame on the person that talked us into that? We already saw in the passages before that Abraham started trying to place the blame on God. Well, he made me leave. He caused me to leave my safety and my family that I was around and then put me out here in this world. Here you have the people complaining that we want to be back where we were. It would have been better for us. They didn't have the confidence that the Lord, that they needed in the Lord to be placed on them, that He would deliver them. God responds by telling what He would do and the honor that He would receive. When you look after this time period of what He did, is how well known was this occurrence that happened as far as the destruction of Pharaoh's army? Was it isolated? It was known throughout.
Yeah.
It was known, even when you get up to the time of Joshua and outside of Jericho and Rahab, she said, "What? Well, we've heard, you know, we've heard what you, what your God did. We've already heard. Everybody knows, and our hearts just melted in us." So this was something that went around. This was something that was quite known. And when you take one of the greatest dynasties at that time, the Egyptian dynasty and all the pharaohs and stuff, to be completely annihilated by a people that didn't have any warfare about them, that, you know, that God on their behalf was fighting for them, and how it happened, you know, you have to stop and consider, you know, the army is gone, and you're sitting here thinking you were told that, well, the Red Sea just parted, waters were walled up, they went through and survived, but then the sea collapsed on all of the Egyptians and destroyed all of them. And you're sitting here trying to figure out, okay, what natural phenomena would have caused that to happen? I mean, I can understand a strong east wind all night long blowing the waters back. We saw some of that just here recently, didn't we? Yeah, somewhere. Was it
Tampa?
The Tampa, where it took the bay out. The wind pushed the bay out, that it was on dry land. But this was something that, you know, has to be attributed to God. God did this in causing it. And so this was known. And so the people were, you know, that fear was known. So God said, "I'm going to get honor among Egypt." And in getting that honor, he would receive it from everybody else too, in what he had done. And he did. It followed many years later in those that knew what happened. So he protects them with his angel in the clouds so that no harm would come to them by the host of Egypt. When you think about that at night, that he had placed, you know, the angel we already looked at, he said, "The angel's going to lead you. He's going to fight for you. You be sure and obey what he says, because he's working for me," more or less. God said, "He's, you know, he's mine." So the angel is there. He removes to the back. The cloud removes to the back. And its multi-purpose is that it causes darkness for them and light for the others so that they can't come to one another. When you saw that happening and that transpiring, wouldn't that be comforting a little bit to know that, well, God is there working? God is doing that? It would have been great to see. So it should have relieved them somewhat, gave them some confidence. Some application of what we can learn from this is God knows our nature, and He knows what we can handle, and He will put no greater temptation or test upon us that we can't handle. And He said that in the first part here, that He didn't send them by the way of the Philistines because He knew they couldn't handle it. When trials or tests set in, we must be careful not to lose focus and accuse others of being the reason for our dilemma in lieu of placing our confidence and trust in God. They lost their trust and confidence and started blaming Moses and saying, we'd have been better off. We should have stayed back there. Why didn't you leave us alone? You know, we didn't want to listen to you to begin with when you came and told us you wanted us to leave. We need to be careful in how we view the reality of a situation and not let our thoughts limit God in His power and work because of viewing the odds of the test or the trial. And that can apply to sickness. It can apply to anything that we may be facing in our life. Okay? Don't view the reality of a situation and let our thoughts limit God in His power. And oftentimes we do that. We limit God in His power. But don't let it limit God in His power and His work because we look at the odds and think the odds are greater. Who was the odds in favor of between the Egyptians and Israel?
Israel.
The odds, well, I mean, when you're looking at it and just viewing it, where would it have been from? It would have been with the Egyptians. Okay, that's the odds when you look at it, you're going to say, okay, it's definitely in it with the Egyptians. That's where the odds are at because of the group that they had. And here was a people that God has already said they weren't ready for war because that's why they didn't go the short route. So when you look at it, you wouldn't automatically think the odds is in favor of the Egyptians, but they discounted God. They limited God and His power.
Okay. You know, you talk about the power of God. They all just got done witnessing the great power of God and the plague. And so rapidly thereafter, we faith.
It was a bigger surmounting odds that they saw that they were faced with. So, yeah, it created a problem. Thank you.